Secular, the State Department blames lack of jobs for acts of terror.
Live from Washington, D.C., Jay Sekulow Live.
Are we killing enough of them?
We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them. So are the Egyptians, so are the Jordanians. They're in this fight with us. But we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. We need, in the medium and longer term, to go after the root causes that leads people to join these groups, whether it's lack of opportunity for jobs.
I want to be very clear about how I see it. Al-Qaeda and ISIL and groups like it are desperate for legitimacy. They try to portray themselves as religious leaders, holy warriors in defense of Islam. That's why ISIL presumes to declare itself the Islamic State.
And now, Chief Counsel for the American Center for Law and Justice, Jay Sekulow.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to the broadcast. As you can tell, I'm traveling today, but I am on the phone talking about what is apparently a huge disconnect between the White House and the threat we're actually engaged in. I want to play for you right now a soundbite coming out of the State Department spokesperson on why we have the violent extremism of ISIS. Take a listen.
Are we killing enough of them?
We're killing a lot of them, and we're going to keep killing more of them. So are the Egyptians, so are the Jordanians. They're in this fight with us. But we cannot win this war by killing them. We cannot kill our way out of this war. We need, in the medium and longer term, to go after the root causes that leads people to join these groups, whether it's lack of opportunity for jobs.
This is absurd. First of all, we can kill ourselves, kill them out of the war. You could destroy them. Jordan, this is the fundamental flaw of what's going on with right now with this war on ISIS, and it is also a fundamental flaw in the president's authorization for use of military force. This is really serious.
Absolutely. When you think about war and you think about the ideas, and on the one hand saying, well, we're going to kill a lot of them, but we can't kill our way out of a war. That, you know, when you go to war, when you go to battle, that's the idea. The idea is not at that moment to think, how do I save this enemy? How do I re-educate this enemy? We're not talking about the Marshall Plan yet for the former territory held by the Islamic State. This is not the 1930s and 1940s either. We're dealing with a threat that you eliminate. You don't have to rebuild for them. You don't have to set them back up with schools. You have to take them out one by one, and the leadership as well as the ground troops, to a point where no one wants to join ISIS anymore, because joining ISIS means you're going to be dead immediately. And not necessarily, you know, have this whole long martyrship program. You're going to be dead.
And here's the thing that we've got to concentrate our folks on in Washington, D.C. And right now, you've got the statement in the papers this morning. This is the president's op-ed from yesterday, where he says, we know that military force alone cannot solve this problem, nor can we simply take out terrorists with killings and victims. Actually, that's not true. Military force can solve this problem. We ended World War II with military force. Who is this president talking to? We ended World War II with military force.
Yeah, no question about it, Jay. And, you know, one of the key dynamics here on Capitol Hill around this authorization of force is that there are actually several veterans of this war who are now serving in Congress on both sides of the aisle, people who have seen this enemy, people who know its motivations and the depths of its depravity. Jay, we are hearing right now from people on both sides of the aisle, veterans like Adam Kinzinger on the Republican side, Tulsi Gabbard on the Democrat side, that an authorization of force needs to include two things. Number one, it needs to clearly identify the threat, something that President Obama's requested authorization does not do. And two, Jay, one that gives him wide authority to use all the means necessary to defeat the threat. Neither Tulsi Gabbard nor Adam Kinzinger wants limitations on that authorization of force. The president has tried to limit his authority. Congress absolutely should not do that.
And the president has also tried to eliminate the authority of the next president of the United States, folks. That's how serious this threat is with this ridiculous authorization or use of military force. It is the wrong message that we're sending to our enemies. It is not fair to bootstrap the next president by not saying we will do what is necessary to crush this enemy. It needs to be rejected, and there's bipartisan support to reject it. We need you to sign on to this petition, which is growing rapidly. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org, or 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org, for 1-877-989-2255. We want you to sign on this petition now. Have your voice heard so that we can take this enemy out. Reject the president's notion that if we give them jobs, they won't try to kill people. ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255.
The deadly reach of ISIS, the Islamic State, is expanding at a time when radical Islamists ramp up their brutality with the beheadings of 21 Egyptian Christians. President Obama is now trying to force his failed foreign policy on our next president. That's right. The president has sent an authorization for the use of military force to Congress that would restrict our nation's fight against ISIS. Even worse, it would tie the hands of the next president, a flawed strategy that would remain in place even after President Obama leaves office. As ISIS keeps advancing, now is not the time to tie our hands. The ACLJ is mobilizing our resources on Capitol Hill to send a clear message: say no to President Obama's failed policies. Add your name to our new petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255, or add your name online, aclj.org. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at aclj.org.
Back to the broadcast, everyone. We are moving on a petition right now to not go with the vote to take place, to really veto, if you will, or stop the president from his authorization of use of military force, because we think it's the wrong authorization. The authorization, as Republicans and Democrats are saying, needs to include overwhelming force capabilities and not bootstrap the next president and not signal to our enemy what we're not willing to do. The president is putting out a narrative. Understand this. The narrative is, number one, we're not engaging in a war with radical Islam. That's false. Number two, that we can't just crush them. We can't militarily overcome them. That is a horrible statement. Our military is the best in the world. We can crush this enemy. I just said in the last segment, we won World War II. We can win this war. But the president is saying, no, you can't. We've got to provide job opportunities, as if that's going to solve this kind of radical extremism and the establishment of a caliphate. This is the problem here. And as you're going to hear in a minute, the president's going to be talking about how we're not dealing with religious leaders here when he's talking about these radical caliphs, a Caliph Ibrahim who's running the Islamic State. There's another problem with the president's order. It bootstraps the next president of the United States. So, folks, what we want you to do, and we need to make this really clear. We want to back our military so that they can have the capability to do what is necessary to win this battle. That is what needs to happen here. Unequivocally, we need to be able to win this battle. This is where you come in. We need, for everyone that's listening to us, to go to aclj.org and sign this petition. There's bipartisan support to not have this authorization go forward. So it's aclj.org. That's aclj.org. Or 1-877-989-2255. So 877-989-2255 or aclj.org. Let me go around to Jordan and Fan. I want to play a statement here and then get everybody's comments on it, because this shows you where I think the president, again, is just so far out of touch with the reality of what we're fighting. Listen to this.
They propagate the notion that America, and the West generally, is at war with Islam. That's how they recruit. That's how they try to radicalize young people. We must never accept the premise that they put forward, because it is a lie. Nor should we grant these terrorists the religious legitimacy that they seek. They are not religious leaders. They're terrorists. And we are not at war with Islam.
Okay, well, first, these are not religious leaders, they're terrorists. Well, they're terrorists who happen to be religious leaders. Tell that to the tens of thousands, millions of people that are following these. Jordan, this is we're pointing, you know, what we do on this broadcast each and every day is we give you the evidence and then the solution. Here's the evidence. The president has got a narrative. We're not in a war with Islam. These are not religious leaders. The problem with the narrative is, Jordan, the facts are the exact opposite.
Right. The words don't match up to what's actually happening on the ground, or the fact that we're having to have this extremism conference on how to combat it. They don't want to say in the Islamic community, but that's what they're doing. I mean, they're bringing in all these different Islamic community leaders, many of which, by the way, have ties to radical groups. There's one that's tied to that Boston mosque, that whole setup there, which was tied to the brothers who carried out the Boston bombing attacks, Islamic terrorism. And so that idea on its own. And also, you know, there was one interesting note, and this likely was from the people criticizing and speaking out, that in the piece in the LA Times from President Obama, they did he did finally call it Egyptian Christians who were killed by the Islamic terrorists, the ISIS members in Libya. And so that acknowledgement, the fact that we're acknowledging they're targeting other religious people, but we're not acknowledging why they're doing so and what's driving them to do that.
Well, that, I think, is the fundamental problem, again, with what the president's doing. They are targeting Jews and Christians, folks. I mean, that's becoming clear. And Muslims that disagree with them, clearly. But the Christians, it's when the president refused to call the 21 Egyptian Coptic Christians until he got so much flack that he had to put it out in an op-ed, it shows you the nature of how out of touch the president is with the situation. Ben, let's talk about what's happening in Washington right now and what we're doing. What are we mobilizing? What are we working on this front? And what can our people do?
Well, the president has sent his requested authorization of the of force to the Hill for them to consider. The problem, as you've laid out, Jay, is it is full of limitations. It repeals the existing authorization of force that was in place, and it puts forward one that would put a three-year expiration on it, which, Jay, just quickly, let me say this. That makes it a political document that the next commander-in-chief then has to deal with. It also says that there can be no enduring troops, whatever that means. That is in his request. What the Hill is considering right now and where we are asking people to engage is say that authorization of force actually takes us backwards in this fight. You need to draft a new one that gives the president all the authority he needs to eliminate this threat after he fully identifies it. We are asking the Hill to rewrite that authorization and then send it back to the president. Jay, we're not asking them to limit the president, as you have said. In fact, we are asking them to give him full authority to address this threat. They have to reject the one that he sent to them and write a new one that is much, much stronger.
I want to play for you Representative Gabbard's comments yesterday on this whole issue. This gives you an idea. This is number six, or number seven, actually. Take a listen.
The administration is misidentifying the enemy and their motivation by saying that they're motivated out of materialistic aspirations, that they're motivated out of poverty, of a lack of jobs or education or opportunity. And as a result, the courses of action that the administration is proposing are also materialistic in nature, saying that, well, if we just go and alleviate poverty, if we go and create jobs and increase opportunity and institute this Western style of democracy, that somehow this is going to solve the problem, when really that's not the case.
All right, so this is a Democrat from Hawaii who I agree with 100%, who also is a veteran. And let me say this. This isn't the war on poverty. Let me say it again. This is not the war on poverty. This is a war on radical jihadists. And I am sick and tired of the President of the United States saying that we cannot militarily defeat these people. That is absurd. Of course we can. But this is not the war on poverty. The president studied ISIS. They're not, all the recruits are not just coming from poor and impoverished areas. These are people with college degrees, the middle or upper middle tiers of their societies, people leaving places like London, England, and Paris, France, and the United States to go serve with these people. This idea that this is a war on poverty, I cannot believe, Jordan, that the president is turning this into some kind of social policy, social justice policy, when it's a military action and we need to be taking out the enemy here.
Yeah, and we've got terrorist attacks in Scandinavia, you know, whether it's Denmark and places that have, you know, much, much more broad and extensive social welfare programs than even the United States. These European, more socialist type systems for smaller countries where people do have all these opportunities, all these different programs they can take part in, and yet they're still being radicalized. You can't get to the issue of rebuilding and financing and having, you know, these former terrorists, because they're not former yet, starting businesses when they are still cutting 21 people's heads off or burning 45 people alive in a cage following the burning of the Jordanian pilot. Now it's 45 that we're getting news reports about that's happening inside Iraq. This is, they're thinking way into the future and not dealing with the immediate problem, because the immediate problem is exactly what you said. Why are people in Denmark, France, and the United States willing, or in the UK or Canada or Australia, willing to sacrifice their lives, that you'll likely someone in their family moved there to start a better life, and now they are turning back to and returning back to places that their families left decades ago in many situations. So, Than, let's be really clear, because I'm going to give a clarion call to action here, folks. We need to have everybody that's listening to us take action on this. Let's talk about exactly what we're doing with our petition.
Well, it starts with what you and Jordan just laid out on the war on poverty. You know, Nidal Hassan had a job, Jay. I mean, many of the leaders of these terrorist cells came from affluent families. That is not the motivation of these attacks. And what we are calling in this petition is for leaders on Capitol Hill to hold the president accountable for exactly the kind of threat that we're facing. It is a radical ideology that we are facing, not a poor economy. We are calling on the president and the State Department to quit talking in those terms. And then, Jay, we're asking them to do something very tangible. It is the United States Congress' ability to issue an authorization of force. They do not have to pass the one that the president put forward. We are asking them to rewrite a new one that identifies the threat and gives the president the power and the full authority to eliminate that threat. That is the authorization of force that we want sent back to the White House. And when they come back to Capitol Hill next week, we are saying scrap the authorization the president sent you and write a new one that fully authorizes the president to eliminate this threat.
All right, folks, we're not in a war on poverty here. This is a war on radical jihadists. We need a authorization for the use of military force that is not one that is providing for the Peace Corps to come in and solve this problem, but rather to use overwhelming military force if necessary to curtail this enemy who we can eliminate. We've got to have the will to do it. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org, or 1-877-989-2255. So it's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255 to sign on to this petition. Let me urge you, again, call our toll-free number at 877-989-2255 or go to ACLJ.org and sign that petition. By the way, our book, Rise of ISIS, deals with this at length. It's available at Barnes & Noble, Amazon, wherever books are sold. You need to get your copy, as this issue is certainly front and center. Rise of ISIS, a threat we can't ignore. Get the book. Get educated. We'll be back with more in a moment.
No, I can't stand this evil anymore.
At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at ACLJ.org. The deadly reach of ISIS, the Islamic State, is expanding. At a time when radical Islamists ramp up their brutality with the beheadings of 21 Egyptian Christians, President Obama is now trying to force his failed foreign policy on our next president. That's right, the president has sent an authorization for the use of military force to Congress that would restrict our nation's fight against ISIS. Even worse, it would tie the hands of the next president, a flawed strategy that would remain in place even after President Obama leaves office. As ISIS keeps advancing, now is not the time to tie our hands. The ACLJ is mobilizing our resources on Capitol Hill to send a clear message. Say no to President Obama's failed policies. Add your name to our new petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
Welcome back to the broadcast, everyone. We are approaching 80,000, or a little over 80,000 signatures on our petition. We want to defeat this authorization to use of military force and substitute one that actually allows us to do exactly what the title says, use military force. The president's approaching this as if this is the war on poverty. That's why he's having his State Department and his White House staff make these statements about this is all about poverty and the lack of job opportunities. And words matter here. So, again, we want you to sign that petition at aclj.org or 877-989-2255. Words do matter. Listen to this conversation between this question from Ed Henry on Fox News and Charles Krautheimer, number four.
Language matter here?
Of course it does. It defines the conflict. I mean, Churchill won, saved England and civilization because in 1940 he was able to enlist the English language and he put it to work on behalf of civilization. What this administration is doing is precisely the opposite. It's sort of deconstructing any resistance with its refusal to acknowledge the obvious.
And in not acknowledging the obvious and trying to recast this, which is what they are, they're recasting this as a fight for social justice. The president, in the statements he's issuing, is actually saying he understands, almost as if he understands the mindset of why the terrorists are doing this. That sense of legitimacy is absolutely, positively outrageous, Jordan, that the president would even be thinking this, let alone saying it.
Well, that's right. And obviously we're getting a more of a look into their mindset here, what they think is the driving factor. They don't think it's ideology or the religious language. And, of course, you know, we know from the actual what has happened, whether it's the widespread destruction of Christian churches in Iraq and Syria, whether it's the targeted killing of Christians, and most recently 21 who are their necks are sliced, their throats slit on the beach of Libya and thrown into the water, used for recruitment videos. They end the video with, next will be in Rome. You can't use any more religious symbolism and religious language than they are doing. And the problem is, it's not, even with the airstrikes, and even though it may be true that most Muslims are not going to take up arms with ISIS, the president does acknowledge in the op-ed even that he wrote that there's a problem with people who are doing recruitment and the leadership structures. And that is, again, what we're talking about here, is that this is more widespread than the people who ultimately go over to Iraq and Syria through various places. It's also about the people who are sending them there and the ideology that's driving them. Yet they will not acknowledge exactly what that ideology is. And let me tell you something. It is not a social justice program of economic empowerment.
Let me take it a step further than what Jordan said. Here's the president's own words. I'm going to read this to you. This is out of his op-ed. Okay, governments that deny human rights play into the hands of extremists who claim that violence is the only way to achieve change. Now listen to this. Efforts to counter violent extremism will only succeed if citizens can address legitimate grievances through the democratic process and express themselves through strong civil societies. Now listen to what the president, understand what the president of the United States just said in these words. Efforts to counter violent extremism will only succeed if citizens can address legitimate grievances through the democratic process. So the terrorists in Iraq, in the ISIS terrorists in Syria and Iraq, and now moving into Jordan and other places, the reason they're doing this is because they cannot, ready for this, address legitimate grievances through this democratic process. Meanwhile, they had millions of people in the squares of Tahrir Square, and what ended up happening through the, quote, democratic process, so-called? They elected Mohamed Morsi, the head of the Muslim Brotherhood, who had been the Egyptian people throughout. So the president is living in a dreamland. It's just, the problem is, it's not a reality world. And the moment that we take our eye off the ball is the American people and say, you know what, well, he's the president of the United States, maybe he knows something we don't. Here's the answer to that. No, he doesn't. This is information that's out there. This is a narrative, people. Understand what this is. The reason we're talking with this kind of enthusiasm and energy today is we really believe we're on a tipping point. And this president is trying to hamstring the next president of the United States with this authorization of saying what we're not going to do. We're going to defeat our enemy by not doing something. And that's really what we have to focus in on Capitol Hill. And Dan, this is where it goes back to your team. We have got to get, and I know we're getting bipartisan support here, but we have to keep this this enthusiasm to defeat this up, which, by the way, we've had a great response so far, because the reality is this could be devastating. We're turning a war with terrorists into a war on poverty, and that is a huge mistake that will affect my children, my grandchildren, and everybody that's listening to us as well.
Yeah, and now is the moment to really focus that resolve, Jay. I mean, you talked about the president saying that the terrorist groups have, quote, legitimate grievances. Remember, it was just last week that he was saying he didn't want to overinflate their sense of self-importance. So he's just all over the board on this. And Jay, one of the things that we're telling Capitol Hill as they debate this authorization is they have to understand that this appeasement approach from this administration goes beyond ignorance. This is not ignorance. It is an intentional strategy rooted in the belief that we've got to level the playing field between the United States and the terrorist groups. That is the only way that they will stop killing us, and instead they'll start liking us. Jay, that will not work. It has proven to not work over the last several decades. We think that the Congress should stand behind Adam Kinzinger's authorization that gives the president full authority. And by the way, like you said, that is something that Democrats are starting to line behind. Tulsi Gabbard has said she likes that approach. We think Congress should send that authorization back to the president, and it's of critical importance that they do it quickly.
Jordan, you have to work with the State Department on the variety. Why are they doing this? What is the narrative? I mean, I think I know what the narrative is, and that is this is a social justice thing. But why are they insisting on this in the face of the evil and the growing nature of ISIS?
Well, you know, it's bizarre. They are looking at it through liberal political backgrounds, and economic empowerment, more government programs, and more handouts. And if we do that, then if we empower these people, they suddenly will not hate us, and they'll all want to go right to work. Think about what happened in Iraq. We got rid of Saddam Hussein, this horrendous dictatorship, to allow more of an open and free market. In Afghanistan, we took out the Taliban, and again, to allow a more open and free market, women could go to school. And yet these groups still thrive. They thrive when we pull out militarily too early, not because we haven't spent enough money. It's always part of the strategy when you go into conflict to try and do some rebuilding along the way. But that's not the main goal, especially at this point in the fight against ISIS. The fight against ISIS right now is to take them down to a point where you can even freely move and people could freely move in the territories formerly held by them. And while some fighting still continues, we're at a point where they are basically going along as they please. And you know, I don't think this is an issue where if you were to take out, you know, even their top leadership, whether it's Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi or another couple of commanders, that it suddenly falls apart. And this is different, but it's more of a full-on movement, and people are joining up rapidly, even though the U.S. bombs continue to drop.
Well, folks, this is what we need you to do as we close this segment of the broadcast out. Remember, we're here for another 30 minutes, so if you're on SiriusXM, you get the whole broadcast. If not, just go over to ACLJ.org. We're streaming it there. First, get our book, Rise of ISIS. Make sure your friends have it. Study it. Understand the nature of ISIS, Hamas, what they're doing, how they're violating international law. The book, Rise of ISIS, still selling very well because we're educating people on that. We encourage you to do that. Everybody else that's listening to me right now, if you've not signed on to this petition, fighting this authorization of military force, the authorization that the president has put forward, and we're going to support these others that actually allow for military force, we need you to add your name right now. ACLJ.org, that's ACLJ.org, or 1-877-989-2255. Folks, we don't have a moment to lose here. It's 877-989-2255. That's 877-989-2255 or ACLJ.org. And don't forget, Rise of ISIS, available in bookstores everywhere.
As ISIS keeps advancing, now is not the time to tie our hands. The ACLJ is mobilizing our resources on Capitol Hill to send a clear message. Say no to President Obama's failed policies. Add your name to our new petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.
back to the broadcast, everyone. We're talking about what we think is a fundamental conflict between the President of the United States and the reality of the nature of the conflict we're engaged in. Coming up, you're going to be joined by a couple of our experts on ISIS. I want to get everybody reacclimated to this because the battle is intensified. But right now, Jordan, we've got the president basically putting forward a narrative that this is a war on poverty. He's got the State Department and the Department of Defense saying if we got to get them jobs. They've got social unrest. There's a reason they're doing this, and the reason they're doing is this is they're not getting their version of relief within their government, so therefore they're cutting people's heads off. And that's the president's narrative now. It's now a war on poverty instead of a war against Islamic extremism.
Yeah, and why are they specifically then targeting Christians and saying, you know, we'll be in Rome and using all this religious language? If that was truly the case, wouldn't it be more chaotic in the sense that they're governing? I mean, they set up social structures. We may be kind of disgusted by the way they govern and the punishments they carry out, but they've set up court systems, prisons, police systems, and of course they've got their militaries as well. They're running hospitals. They're running social welfare programs. So it's kind of a bizarre. And then, you know, I just point to, and I shared this earlier this morning on my Facebook page and on Twitter, the New York Post front page today, which has President Obama's official photo, and they've added a blindfold to that. It says Islamic terror. I just don't see it. And so this is, again, this narrative, it's really upsetting, I think, to people, and especially people in New York who have experienced this even over the last decade and longer than that. And the idea that we now have a president who, even while we are dropping the bombs and sending the planes and working with coalition allies, will not acknowledge who we are dropping the bombs on and why we're having to do that.
It's a pretty unbelievable situation, but it's interesting to me, Than, that the president is losing support here, and that's important.
Yeah, Jay, he's losing support on both sides of the aisle, and the interesting thing here is we think that Congress should give the president authorization of force. We don't believe they should restrict
right.
him. We think that they should make sure he has the clear authority to defeat the enemy, so that is garnering support on both sides of the aisle. And what concerns us, Jay, and you've laid this out, but the president actually wants to tie his own hands here. He wants to restrictions on enduring combat troops. He wants a three-year expiration, which also restricts the next commander-in-chief. And maybe most importantly, he wants a repeal of the existing authorization for force. So what he's really advocating for, Jay, is less authority to fight this threat than he already has today. That is an extremely dangerous proposition when you're facing an enemy that wants to kill you.
You know, Fan just brought up a really good point, Jordan, and that is this the whole approach here. I think this is realistic. The president, there's an existing use of force agreement that's been passed that is much more stringent and gives the president much more authority. This really, and I've been saying this, this really bootstraps the president and the next president of the United States to have to undo this mess, which will just get worse in the next 18 months. That's really the fundamental problem here, why we've got to defeat it.
You realize what he's doing is saying, okay, this is all we will do, this is all we can do, and we're not going to go any further than that, basically making up his mind for him, taking away the flexibility from the military, taking away his ability to change his strategy as a leader, which, of course, in conflicts is important and happens often that you've got to change and modify your strategy. And here what he's trying to do is basically tell ISIS, in a sense, this is how you'll survive us. This is how you can carry on past my presidency.
Well, I think the reality is, folks, and you're going to hear this, we're going to get into the next segment of the broadcast a lot more about ISIS, so you understand the nature of the enemy we're engaged in. And that we need to be fighting. This is not a war on poverty. This is a war on jihadic extremism. And as you're going to find out in the next two segments of the broadcast, this is a serious enemy, and one we can defeat if we've got the will to do it. That's really the question here. We don't have the leadership to do it right now. That's part of the problem. But we've got a book that we want to encourage everybody to purchase called Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. You need to get it. It's available in bookstores everywhere. Rise of ISIS, Amazon, Barnes & Noble. Get it. Get it for your friends. You can get an e-version of it or the paperback. I encourage you to get it again, Rise of ISIS. If you've not yet signed the petition, you can do that as well. ACLJ.org. That's ACLJ.org or 1-877-989-2255. That's ACLJ.org or 877-989-2255. We've got a lot more ahead.
No, I can't stand this evil anymore.
The deadly reach of ISIS, the Islamic State, is expanding. At a time when radical Islamists ramp up their brutality with the beheadings of 21 Egyptian Christians, President Obama is now trying to force his failed foreign policy on our next president. That's right, the president has sent an authorization for the use of military force to Congress that would restrict our nation's fight against ISIS. Even worse, it would tie the hands of the next president, a flawed strategy that would remain in place even after President Obama leaves office. As ISIS keeps advancing, now is not the time to tie our hands. The ACLJ is mobilizing our resources on Capitol Hill to send a clear message. Say no to President Obama's failed policies. Add your name to our new petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org. At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at aclj.org.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Jay Sekulow Live. Than Bennett in Washington, D.C. Folks, we are talking about the new authorization for use of military force that the president has sent to Capitol Hill. It would limit his ability to fight this threat, in three specific ways. There are other ways as well, but in three specific ways. One, it would say can be no enduring combat troops, even though that term does not really have a definition. Second, it would say there is a three-year expiration, which would tell the enemy exactly how long they have to hold out and would hinder the next president's ability to address this threat. And maybe most importantly, folks, it would repeal the 2001 authorization that was against al-Qaeda and its affiliates, of which ISIS would clearly fall underneath. So that authorization of force would go away and it would be replaced by one that is much, much weaker. We are asking all of you to sign our petition asking Congress to reject that authorization and to draft a new one that is much stronger, much clearer, identifying the threat and granting the president the authority he needs to eliminate that threat. If you want to sign that petition, the number to do so is 877-989-2255, or you can sign online at aclj.org. Listen, folks, in this segment and the next segment, I'm going to play for you a discussion between the four authors of our new book called Rise of ISIS, A Threat You Can't Ignore. This is Jay Sekulow, Jordan Sekulow, Skip Ash, and David French talking about where ISIS came from, what their motivations are, the threat that they pose to the rest of the world. And if you have not yet read this book that the four of them authored, you need to do it today. It's called Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, and it's in bookstores everywhere. Let's go ahead and take a listen. These are the four authors of the new book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore.
When we're coming to you from the studios of our Oxford Center for the Study of Law and Public Policy, that is the center, by the way, at Oxford, that we developed the papers that ultimately became the book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, now available in bookstores everywhere. Already, by the way, on the New York Times bestseller list for ebooks. In fact, the very first week it was out, it was on both the ebook list and the ebook and print list, and we didn't even have a print list print book out yet. So now it is out on paperback literally around the country. We're encouraging you to buy multiple copies. We want to make sure it gets on the paperback New York Times bestsellers list. Again, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. We've gone through a couple of the chapters here, but I wanted to go to the third chapter because I think it's important to understand the nature of the conflict that we're in. We call ISIS in chapter 3 the world's most ruthless and powerful jihadist army. David, you served in Iraq. You have faced jihadist army. That's a bold statement we're making. Let's back this up now with the evidence.
Absolutely. What happened last summer is ISIS crossed the border into Iraq and then immediately routed two full divisions, according to some reports, two full divisions of Iraqi army troops that were equipped with American weaponry. They immediately captured all of that weaponry, which included up-armored Humvees, which included artillery, which included even tanks. So all of a sudden, ISIS went from a conventionally armed jihadist army to a jihadist army armed with some of the most advanced weaponry in the world.
Skip, does that make ISIS different than Al-Qaeda?
It does make ISIS different from Al-Qaeda, although Al-Qaeda used some sophisticated items in their fight. They had nothing like a traditional army. We have now an army in the Islamic State, this ISIS army, that has the traditional equipment. You know, the United States equipment is among the best equipment in the world. The tanks are the best in the world. This is a group that has worldwide ambitions and is now gaining the ability to carry out those ambitions.
Jordan, in our upcoming program at Oxford, we're at the Oxford Center for Law and Study of Law and Public Policy studio here. But when we're back at Oxford, we're going to be talking about Turkey. Turkey's a NATO member, yet so far has really done little, if anything. In fact, there are some reports that Turkey may be actually moving the oil that ISIS now controls on the black market.
Well, we know that ISIS is using Turkey to move that oil. That's how they're able to at least take in a minimum of $1 million a day. And some estimate their budget upwards of the millions, maybe even $6 million on a good day. And this is before the airstrikes began, when they were really doing as they pleased. But the oil source, I mean, that's, again, a significant part of their budget. It's a long-established black market in Turkey, and they're able to use these small amounts. You know, I mean, we're talking about $1 million worth of oil. It's a large amount for a terror organization. It's not a large amount when you're talking about the worldwide oil trade and that black market. So Turkey being somewhat complicit in that, they've even, you know, said in these reports that when it comes to oil prices in these places, it may be that you're taking and even supporting your enemy, but because it brings the price down so significantly, it's worth doing that.
Well, we've got a lot more ahead to cover. We're talking about our book, The Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. This is a very special broadcast from our studios here at the Oxford Center for the Study of Law and Public Policy. That's where these papers originated that became the book. The book is really a must-read. It's a New York Times bestseller. We want to make sure you have access to it. So it's available now in bookstores around the country in paperback, and we're encouraging you to acquire multiple copies. Of course, you can order it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble as well, or wherever, literally, wherever books are sold, they should have Rise of ISIS. And get copies for your friends as well. Very readable, but very real. Tells you who ISIS is, what the threats are, their links to Hamas, and what we can do to stop it. We're talking about ISIS and the threat. Let me read to you from page 40 of the book. This was a statement by the Caliph Ibrahim. Abu Bakr al-Baghdadi is his war name, if you will. So to arms, to arms, soldiers of Islam, fight, fight. Rush your Muslims to your state. It is your state. Syria is not for Syrians, and Iraq is not for Iraqis. The land is for the Muslims, all Muslims. This is my advice to you. If you hold to it, you will conquer Rome and own the world, if Allah wills. So the idea here is a global conquest.
Oh, absolutely. They have they control territory that's the size of the state. And you know, when you listen to that, he is trying to rewind the clock to the glory days of the Islamic Caliphate, when Rome and the Roman Empire was considered to be their primary opposition. So he has ambitions, as you said, that are absolutely global. And when he talks like that, he's tapping into a deep desire amongst millions of Muslims, particularly young Muslim men, to become part of a new caliphate, a new glory days.
Jordan, when we look at the recruiting efforts, we talked about this in the earlier broadcast. We look at the recruiting efforts. You see the beheadings. We're horrified. They're using it as a recruiting effort. And the question is right now, what's the sense in Washington on the nature of this threat?
That it's a significant threat. We are engaged in the same fight that we were engaged in over a decade ago, even before the 9/11 attacks. There was a fight on this growing threat of radical Islam to the United States homeland, and it's continuing today.
Let me read you again from the book. Grandiose threats are nothing new in the jihadist world, but what makes ISIS especially dangerous is its possession of both the means and will to carry out its threats. It is the best equipped, richest terrorist force in the world. And one of the targets of this group clearly has been Christians. The Christian persecution that has gone on has been outrageous. They're marking the homes of Christians with a symbol that stands for Nazarene. I had the opportunity to speak with the vicar of Baghdad, Andrew White, who was serving the church in Baghdad, an Episcopal priest that was serving in Baghdad. And it was just horrific. In fact, I want to play 2 minutes from that interview that we did in Jerusalem. He was out of Iraq and in Jerusalem. That's the only way we could do the interview. Take a listen.
When you are ministering to these, to your congregants, to the people in your church, to these Christians, and I want those that are watching this in the West to understand the scope and nature. You're talking about an ancient Christian people that have been in this region since the beginning of Christendom, and it's been completely wiped out by this ISIS group. And you've been ministering to these people in Baghdad. I have to ask you this question, and Cannon White, I know this is tough, and Andrew, we've been friends a long time. It's your people in your church that are being killed. How are you dealing with this? How are you dealing with this? How are you explaining this to the other believers in the community?
To have your people murdered in front of you, to have the people you love slaughtered, is so terrible. There is no easy answer or easy solution. And yet we know these people who are our enemies, we are called still to love them. And my people say to me, they call me Daddy or Abuna. They say, Daddy, have the rest of the world forgotten about us? Do they not know what's happening to us? And I say to them, no, my darlings, they are with us. Our brothers and sisters in the West, you might not be experiencing this torture that we are experiencing, but we are your brothers and sisters. We are your family, and we need your help. We need your support. We can't do this on our own. The job is so huge, just getting food and cradles and blankets for people. But with you, we can do it.
Folks, those were the four authors of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. I encourage you all to get a copy of that book and read it today. Also, folks, you need to sign this petition asking Capitol Hill to reject the president's flawed authorization of force and draft a new one that gives him the tools he needs to defeat this threat. You can do it by calling 877-989-2255 or by signing online at aclj.org. After this break, more discussion from the four authors of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore.
At a time when our values, our freedoms, our constitutional rights are under attack, it's more important than ever to know that the American Center for Law and Justice is on your side. ACLJ Chief Counsel Jay Sekulow.
We are very grateful. I want to say this, a huge thank you to our friends and members from literally from coast to coast. Because of the generosity of our members, we've added new lawyers. We're handling international affairs as high as even the United Nations. A lot of issues going on, a lot of great things happening, and a huge thank you to our friends and members around the country.
With an exceptional track record of success, the American Center for Law and Justice is on the front lines, protecting your freedoms, defending your rights, in courts, in Congress, and in the public arena. There's no better place to get the facts, the truth, about the issues that matter most to you and your family than at the ACLJ website. Learn more about our work and our defense of freedom online at aclj.org. The deadly reach of ISIS, the Islamic State, is expanding. At a time when radical Islamists ramp up their brutality with the beheadings of 21 Egyptian Christians, President Obama is now trying to force his failed foreign policy on our next president. That's right, the president has sent an authorization for the use of military force to Congress that would restrict our nation's fight against ISIS. Even worse, it would tie the hands of the next president, a flawed strategy that would remain in place even after President Obama leaves office. As ISIS keeps advancing, now is not the time to tie our hands. The ACLJ is mobilizing our resources on Capitol Hill to send a clear message. Say no to President Obama's failed policies. Add your name to our new petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online
aclj.org.
Folks, welcome back to the broadcast. Stan Bennett in Washington, D.C. I am going to jump right back into this interview with the four authors of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. And after this interview, I'm going to play for you some very alarming sound coming out of the State Department that identifies just how misguided this administration is on this growing threat that we're facing. But first, the rest of this discussion between the four authors of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore.
So we know that ISIS is focusing in on Christians. That's been Christians and Muslims that disagree with them. But they've really gone after the Christian community, and the brutality has been incredible. But now let's turn our attention to Hamas. And let me read you something. Again, this is found in our book. This is actually page 43 of Rise of ISIS. This is not information you're going to get anyplace else. We really encourage you to get this book and study it. You become the expert on a topic. We may be looking at the 30-year war here. I mean, this could go on for, it's intergenerational. So we have got to be understanding who we're fighting. We have to understand the nature of the enemy. So now let's talk about Hamas. They have the same goal, which is domination, the creation of a Sharia state, an Islamic state. But here's their goal, where Hamas is focusing on Jews, ISIS was focusing on Christians and other Muslims. Here's Hamas from their charter, page 43 of our book. Our battle with the Jews is long and dangerous, requiring all dedicated efforts. It's a phase which must be followed by succeeding phases, a battalion which must be supported by battalion after battalion of the divided Arab and Islamic world until the enemy is overcome and the victory of Allah descends. So David, Hamas in its sights, again, is the creation of the Islamic State, but it is the elimination of Jews. It's not just the elimination of Israel. It's much broader than that. But clearly, Israel and Jews are the primary target of Hamas, while ISIS is focusing on Muslims that disagree, Yazidis, other religious minorities, and especially Christians.
Absolutely. Hamas wants to make, right now its goal is to make life in Israel so intolerable through terrorist attacks, raining missiles down on the civilian population, that the Jewish population of Israel grows disheartened. And if they ever got the kind of military power that ISIS has, they would spring out of Gaza, they would launch out of Gaza and try to attack and kill as many Jews as they possibly could. The only thing right now that is keeping the Jews of Israel from facing the same fate of the Christians of Iraq is the might of the Israel Defense Forces.
Jordan, let me throw this one to you here with Hamas, because you've been studying this for a long time and you've experienced it firsthand. Their tactic is to get into the community so that you cannot tell the difference. We talked about the law of war violations here between the civilians and the populace and the actual terrorist fighters. But there are reports that there may be upwards of 30,000 Hamas fighters, if you will, troops, available right now today in the West Bank and Gaza.
You know, that's right. And so the idea here that you've got the numbers ready to rise up when they feel like it's best for them. And so right now they're engaged. And listen, if those fighters want to rise up and try to fight Israel, that would be unsuccessful. Could they cause serious damage? Yes, but it's not going to work out for them in the long run. They know that, so instead what they try to do is weaken Israel by gaining international support, giving fodder to the anti-Israel world at the United Nations and that community at the UN, which is unfortunately a growing community, the anti-Israel world. And so they're playing their part in what is ultimately this idea that we will take back our holy land, and that's how they see it, and then ultimately spread this throughout the world, as we've talked about on this broadcast.
We're talking about the rise of ISIS, the interconnection between ISIS and Hamas. We're also talking about our brand new book, Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore, available in bookstores everywhere. We encourage you, as we've been saying, to get it and get multiple copies. I'm reading you something from the book. Hamas does not want peace with Israel. It will not negotiate a permanent peace agreement with Israel. Instead, it will only agree to intermittent truces when its military capabilities have been so degraded that it needs time to recuperate and rearm. And the reality is, David, we just saw that take place in this conflict this summer. This is what they ran out of ammunition. That's when the battle stopped.
Exactly. I mean, that's their strategy from the beginning, is they will fight. If they get beaten back by Israel, they will appeal to the international community for refuge. They'll use that time of refuge to get more weapons, to train more fighters, and then they fight again. This is what they're going to do until either they're destroyed or Israel gives up. So that's why this fight never seems to end. It's because they are dedicated to fighting until Israel is destroyed.
Let me read something from the Hamas Charter. Again, page 46 of our book, Rise of ISIS. This is Article 5 and 8. Allah is its goal. The Prophet is its model to be followed. The Quran, its constitution. Jihad, its way. And death for the sake of Allah, its loftiest desire. And despite their protests to the contrary, Skip, the Charter also says Israel will exist and will continue to exist until Islam abolishes it. So if there's any question to anybody that these jihadists share the same goal, it says Israel will exist and continue to exist until Islam abolishes it. And that is, they're unequivocal about that, Skip.
That's exactly right. This is a religiously motivated group, Hamas. It's an outgrowth of the Muslim Brotherhood. And the Muslim Brotherhood was a group that sought to return to the glory days of Islam. And they thought that one of the ways to do that was to create this caliphate. So we have this situation where Hamas is religiously motivated. They view the Jews as being interlopers and less because they're not from Islam. And therefore, they have a not only a moral obligation, they have a religious obligation to Allah to destroy the Jews and to retake all of the territory occupied by Israel. So this is a religiously motivated group. They're a group that believes that martyrdom is the way, the only way you're sure to have salvation with God and acceptance with God. And therefore, they motivate people to go out and to commit these crimes. And at the same time, they don't value life. They talk over and over again in this movement that you value life, we value death, and therefore they think they have an advantage because they will lay down their lives and they will kill anyone to achieve their goals. And that's why it seems to me that the West is really naive or intentionally blind when they sit there and they try to force Israel to negotiate with a group whose very purpose is to destroy the people they're negotiating with, and they do not compromise.
Folks, again, those are the four authors of Rise of ISIS, A Threat We Can't Ignore. I encourage all of you to read that book today. But folks, as we close the broadcast today, I want to quickly play some sound from you out of the State Department. This is going to alarm you. This came right after the State Department blamed this threat on a poor economy in many regions of this world and would push back against this. This was the excuse that Marie Harf, a statement for the State Department, gave. Let's go ahead and roll it.
So you suggested that maybe if you find these young men jobs, they might not become terrorists, right?
Well, I think that's a gross oversimplification. We cannot kill every terrorist around the world, nor should we try. How do you get at the root causes of this? It might be too nuanced an argument for some, like I've seen over the past 24 hours, some of the commentary out there, but it's really the smart way that Democrats, Republicans, military commanders, our partners in the Arab world think we need to combat.
Folks, it's a too nuanced argument for some to understand what Marie Harf is saying. She is saying, she has the arrogance to say that opposition to the strategy of the president is because we're not smart enough to understand the nuance in it. Folks, that is appalling. We are facing a very dangerous enemy. For our foreign policy to say that this is because of a poor economy or because the terrorists don't have jobs, folks, that is making it more dangerous for the United States of America, more dangerous for the American people. We cannot tolerate. Folks, I need you to sign this petition calling on Capitol Hill to reject this authorization of force that the president has sent forward, to draft a new one that is stronger so that this president and the next president has all the tools he or she needs to fight back against this threat. We don't know exactly what tools they will need to use, but they should have the authority to use the tools necessary. If you agree with us, call now 877-989-2255 or sign online at aclj.org, and we'll talk to you tomorrow.
As ISIS keeps advancing, now is not the time to tie our hands. The ACLJ is mobilizing our resources on Capitol Hill to send a clear message. Say no to President Obama's failed policies. Add your name to our new petition right now. Call 1-877-989-2255. That's 1-877-989-2255 or add your name online, aclj.org.